This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Second hour of the program here. The number, if you want to join us, is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. I do have the verdict, and freshly printed out from the Concord District Court judge that presided over your wife's case, Jake.
Yep.
Jay Noon here with me. I'm Ian. The number again, 603-283-6160. You can join us online anytime at freetalklive.com and enjoy the features on the site. They are completely free, so please enjoy those there, including archives that go back for many years. Totally free. You don't need an account. Just go and get them at freetalklive.com. We want to get into that verdict, but first, we had Frank on the line in Michigan. Sadly, he dropped off during the news break, but I thought he asked an interesting question, and I thought it was one that deserved more than 20 seconds. We didn't have much time for his call right before the news break. So, Jay, what he had said prior to the break was, well, you know, it's great that you guys are talking about all this freedom stuff and all these people moving to New Hampshire for freedom, but it seems ironic considering Ian's facing prison time. Ari is going to prison for an 18-month sentence coming up at the end of the month right after Porkfest is over. She's going to be self-reporting, as they call it, to whichever prison they decide to send her to. And your wife is facing up to a year in jail on quote-unquote child endangerment charges. I mean, doesn't that suggest that he didn't say this part, but doesn't right. that suggest that this movement is futile, that this is you guys are getting nowhere? I mean, people are going to jail here.
I mean,
not freedom.
He might suggest that, but that is happening in every jurisdiction.
Right.
And so, like, if this, like my particular case, for example, or my wife's particular case, in Massachusetts, what you would get first is a show cause hearing. And that's essentially what the bench trial was mm-hmm. a show cause hearing. So in Massachusetts, it's a show cause hearing for like a criminal charge. You go in front of a magistrate, and the magistrate would look at the evidence and see if it should be moved forward to a trial or dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And the magistrate just literally rubber stamp everything that the police put in front of them.
Yeah, because they're not going to dismiss it.
Because their pension fund depends on it.
Sure.
All these guys draw off the same pension fund. There is a thing called the Court Registry Investment System. The acronym is the CRIS. And it's a Court Registry Investment System where every time a case is created, there are bonds that are basically created out of thin air, and they trade on these marketplaces or like stock exchange type things. It's actually pretty much all over in Europe where these bonds trade, or the UK or whatever. But anyways, their system depends on it. So that's happening everywhere. But here in New Hampshire, so you get support, especially if you're fighting the right fight for freedom. I mean, people who, do actual crimes where they're like they beat their girlfriend or they kill somebody or they steal property mm-hmm. or they commit perjury or things like this, they don't get a courtroom full of people supporting them.
Right.
But if you're someone who is fighting a good fight and you're brought up on victimless crimes, where there's no injury, there's no valid cause of action, nobody's rights have been infringed upon, and you ask for it, you're going to get some support.
You had a full courtroom.
Yes.
And it would have been more people in there, but they actually moved the trial to the smallest courtroom in the courthouse for your wife, just because they knew there was a large group of people there, and they wanted to exclude as many people as possible. But it was a full courtroom, and I counted from 30 to 40 adults. I didn't even count the kids.
Right.
There's probably another 10 to 15 of them. So very, very large turnout for this particular hearing. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here, maybe, play as though I'm Frank, and say, what good does that do? So you got 30 people in the court. You still got found guilty.
Yeah, well, it's, and we'll read the verdict here in a little bit, but
yeah,
you got found guilty, and it's a kangaroo court. So here's the thing. the circuit court is like the lowest level of court. So basically the judge that was in this particular case is a low level judge.
Right.
So either this
it's his job to find you guilty, basically.
Right. It's his job to keep up the system. It's his job to make sure that the judicial pension fund, you know, this is what these guys are working for. They're working for their pensions. They want to keep their
pensions. 90%.
Yeah. They want that judicial pension fund to be nice and full of money, and the federal government gives them money to enforce childhood endangerment. There's that particular charge has a federal incentive. I haven't figured out the exact federal incentive, but what I tipped me off to it as I was doing research, there was a woman in Portsmouth who was charged with child endangerment, leaving three kids in a car, a 9-year-old and a 5- and a 2-year-old. She ran into a store car, and with the car running, and you know the 9-year-old could have jumped in the car and drove off. You know. I jumped in the driver's seat and drove off. So, for example, in that newspaper article, it says the federal government, provides, funding for municipalities to essentially enforce this, I can't remember the RSA off the top of my head, but this child endangerment thing.
It's there. You just got to show
I know
the,
it's
the
there.
Details on it.
We're working on it. I got actually.
But come back to the question of how does it help to have 30, 40 people in the courtroom? What's the benefit of that? If you're going to get found guilty anyway, the judge doesn't care that they're in there.
First off, it's like showing up to a fight and you got 30 people behind you that are going to, maybe support you. And at least they're there to like make sure it's a fair fight or at least try. And it definitely helps your confidence when your friends will take the day off of work. Take their four kids, put it in a minivan, and bring it to the courthouse. Like, that's difficult.
I agree with you. It is a really nice thing to see people that you know backing you up, even though you know it's probably not going to make a difference to the judge or whatever. But it's a nice thing to have that in there. And further, having a large group of people changes the dynamics of the courtroom environment in a way that if you've never experienced it, you can't really understand what it's like. So your typical courtroom environment is like, if you're just there at an arraignment or something and you're the only person there and there's, only friend of yours, right? Like maybe you and one friend or you and your wife or girlfriend or whatever, and that's it. And then everybody else in the room is just a normal person. There's another 25 to 50 people in there that are also there being charged with victimless crimes and other nonsense. Everybody just talks like this. If they talk at all, they're just whispering. Yep. It's like they're in church, right? And there's a lot of similarities between government courthouses and churches, as a matter of fact.
These guys are a religious cult, best I can
tell.
People who worship the state.
Yeah, I mean, you got a guy in a robe who goes up on a riser in front of a room, and he's behind this podium, and he's got acolytes who will do whatever it is that he says to do, and there are priests, high priests and priests in there that utter the language that they speak in the court. There's religious iconography in there, like flags, and there's literally pews in there as well. But if you change the numbers, you change the ratio, if you can get half of that courtroom that is on your side, if you can get half, and those people sit up front, and they do things like our friends tend to do. Now, there were a few of them that stood for the judge, and I was kind of like, come on, guys. But you don't stand for the judge, for instance, because that's a religious thing. And why are you following their religion? All men are created equal, so why should you stand for one man? But if you can do that in front of the regular people who are in the courtroom, and the man, the bailiff walks in front of the judge and says, all rise, and the first two rows full of people don't rise, I've seen it happen where the rest of the courtroom will stay seated.
Yep.
And
that's a powerful statement.
You know every one of those people would have stood up if the people in the front rows had also stood, or even if they were alone in the court, they would have stood. But because they felt like they could go along with the crowd, which is to say, stay seated, they did. And, of course, if you can get the whole courtroom full of your people, then you get an entire different atmosphere. No one is whispering anymore. There's people just talking at a normal clip, you know, before the judge comes in, right? Because if the judge is, you know, going to come in and he's going to have you thrown in a prison cell if you talk too loud. But prior to that, people are speaking, you know, at a normal tone of voice. They're cracking jokes. They're having fun. It's a completely different feeling because normally court is this very oppressive, quiet place where everybody's just obedient and. That's totally different when everybody's in. In this case, there was kids running around. There's, in your case, yeah. Kids are running around. Jeremy Kaufman's cracking jokes in the back, and people are pointing out all the crazy stuff in the courtroom. There's just all kinds of interesting conversations going on that never happens when you're alone in court. And all of that kind of combined, it really is I think it buoys the defendant. It really helps the defendant feel like they might even have a chance.
And when you got people who love you mm-hmm. there at that courtroom, that's a real powerful statement in the court of public opinion. And it builds a confidence. And I can tell you, I've actually never been on trial per se by myself.
Hmm.
But I have several times been in court and people are like, you know, just a speeding ticket trial. And it's just that one guy, and it's like him versus, you know, the judge who's there to extract for him because the judge is a parasite.
Yeah.
In fact, the judge is an irresponsible parasite. He can commit all kinds of crimes and nothing happens to him. Same thing with the prosecutor. He's an irresponsible parasite. He has qualified immunity. He commits all kinds of crimes every day and nothing happens to him.
To some extent. The judge will lose control of their own courtroom if they're not careful. If there's a full court of liberty-loving activists, and I was talking about how it changes the atmosphere. I remember during, it didn't happen as much during your wife's trial, but during one of Adamo Freeman's trials in Manchester where we had a larger court full of people, I think it was probably 60 or something like that were attending Adamo's trial. There were so many people in there. Whenever the government witnesses made ridiculous statements, people would just laugh out loud. Multiple people in the court would laugh out loud. Normally, if one person laughs, the judge will zero in on them. And I think your judge did do some zeroing in on some of the audience at one point. Like, the next person that says something, I'm sending you out of here or something. Something like that was said at some point. But if there's 5 or 10 people that are laughing in the court, it can be difficult for them to single one person out and target them for retaliation. And so they just sort of have to let it happen if it keeps on happening, if people keep ignoring the judge's threats. And again, it's another example of how the whole feeling of a courtroom can change. When you've got people applauding for the defendant and you've got them laughing at the government witnesses, it's amazing what can happen. Now, how that affects a jury is an interesting question. We haven't had that too many times, and unfortunately in Adamo's case, they still found him guilty. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the audience's, I guess the feeling of the audience is going to necessarily transfer into the jury members. But at the very least, it makes the whole process a lot more bearable for the defendant, and you really do feel a different feeling.
Another benefit you get that we certainly had was a few state representatives showed up to court.
That's right. Not uncommon up here, yeah.
Right, and And another thing I just wanted to bring up real quick is the attorney in fact. That's really difficult to do in Massachusetts. Now, I have done it with my dad.
Describe what it is.
So attorney in fact is where if you're in New Hampshire, you just fill out this form, Rule 3-1 something I think it's called, and you can
one page, right?
Right. Yeah. Who's going to be attorney in fact. You got to basically say that you're not convicted of any felonies, and
so I'm out.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
I think that's ridiculous. Like, for example, that you or like Mark Edge can't be the attorney in fact for Mark Edge couldn't be the attorney in fact for his wife or his son.
Maybe it's something the state reps could remedy.
I've already suggested that exactly to a state rep.
Yeah. There's some changes here that could make this even better. But what you're referring to is essentially a state law that allows the average person to be the attorney for somebody that wants them to.
Right.
So in your wife's case, she's probably never been in court before in any sort of meaningful sense. She seemed to be pretty intimidated by the whole process, which is what they do, right? Like, that's the court procedure, is to intimidate the hell out of you.
Yep.
So you'll want to get a lawyer, which, of course, is an officer of the court, and they're going to do whatever the court says to do.
They're an enemy spy.
And then, you know, and so that's what they want. They want you to walk through a plea deal. They want you to just, you know, make it go away and pay the fines and then, you know, move on. But if you want to, obviously you can take your case yourself, but if you're not confident enough, you don't know what you're doing, and somebody you know does know what they're doing, then in New Hampshire, and this may be true in other states, but in New Hampshire, you can fill out this form, which in this judge's case, to his credit, he allowed you to fill out on the day of the trial, which I was surprised by. I don't think he had to, but he did allow you to fill out this form.
I kind of think he had to.
in that moment. Maybe he did. Maybe he did. But in that moment, he did allow that, and you went, you filled it out. The judge took a recess, came back, and then you were able to be the attorney. You asked all the questions of the witnesses and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we had a prepared objection to being denied our, the right to... exercise counsel, which is, you know, secured and guaranteed by the Constitution that these guys don't follow.
Right. Why should you have to be a member of the Bar Association? Why should you be in this sort of monopoly club?
And all the people who are members of the Bar Association are compromised. They will not challenge the jurisdiction of the court.
That's right. Yeah.
They may get sanctioned. So a Bar Association, you know, member is, you know, his priorities are like his bar license is very close to the top, probably right after his mistress somewhere. But his bar license, you know, is right at the top. And, you know, you're like you as a client, you know, he don't care about you. And in fact, you probably can't even sue him no matter how bad he does because these guys are so protected.
Right.
The other thing we have in New Hampshire when it comes to court is we have a really good jury nullification, law.
It's not prohibited here. You can actually talk about it.
In Massachusetts, they will throw you in a jail cell. They will hold you in contempt for bringing up jury nullification.
Mm-hmm.
I have
federal court. You also cannot bring up jury nullification.
I've had friends that have gotten arrested for passing out jury nullification propaganda
in Massachusetts
in front of the courthouse. In fact, I was passing out jury nullification propaganda to the jurors early one morning in front of the courthouse. And I used to actually walk to the courthouse because if you just walked in Palmer, Mass, there's this trail you could walk through. And actually, I would ride a mountain bike, and it was like a 5-minute ride to my to a friend's house. Mm-hmm. I'd park my truck on a mountain bike, and so I get there. The jury's ready real early in the morning. Everybody's waiting for the door to open. Just show up there. I passed out all of this jury nullification things. See you guys later. And they thought it was one of my friends that did it, and they went and arrested
me.
So when they tried him, they had all these jurors as witnesses. They're like, oh, that's not the guy.
Wow. Yep. What a bunch of F-ups. All right, let's go to the phones here. I got Ricky in the Commonwealth. Go ahead, Ricky, of Pennsylvania.
Thank you there, Brother Ian. Brother Jay, good evening. And my sympathies, Brother Jay. I hope it's okay, but one day... in the future, I'm going to talk about my own experiences with children and youth, like everybody else, you know?
Okay.
But here's my topic tonight. I was thinking about the non-aggression principle, and I'm going to give this kind of being going around a lot now on the show, and I'm going to give two examples in my life, one verbal and one physical, but before I do that, just a little bit of how I came across it. See, I've been mentioning that I am a Jeffersonian, and I said that years ago. Basically, essentially what that means is I use Jefferson as a template for constitutionality, written and unwritten, if you will. Now, I knew, and I've been practicing it for 30 years before I knew libertarians called it that. I believe it was called then, when I knew about it, back in his day, if I'm correct, maybe Jay can correct me on this, the no harm theory. Does that sound about right?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm following you there. So you're basically saying if you don't hurt anybody, nobody should come after you for anything, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Right. It's basically the non-aggressive principle used to be called, I believe, the no-harm theory in Jefferson's day. Now, I believe it originally came from Europe, I believe maybe France possibly or somewhere. But it's the same thing. They just renamed it. I think the wording's interesting, no harm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's that. Now, here's my examples, and I don't believe I violated these examples. Now, here's, I'll make them condensed as possible. Now, I was probably my late 20s, early 30s, and, you know, I went to McDonald's with my old man, you know, get some food. And I saw him coming in, the no-necks, five of them, the jocks. They're sitting at a table. You know, I walked in, I saw him. go up to the counter, young lady, she's barely old enough to work there, got to be like 15 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm put my food order up there, and she's like, she has trouble with mine, but I helped her through it, and we got through it. I step aside. I'm waiting. There's nobody in there. All of a sudden, up comes these no-necks. They walk right next to me, and up to the counter to this girl. And I saw the boss looking at her when I was dealing with her. And they got one French fry, medium fry, with one fry in it, and they're trying to give her trouble that there's a bug in it. So here's what I did. I moved towards their direction, the man in black. And what I proceeded to do is say, you know what? I told them about the school they came from. I lectured them on that. And I lectured them about jocks, too, and what they did wrong. And at that point, I told them to apologize. Now, at that point, their leader said to me, sir, we really apologize, blah, blah, blah. I said, now apologize to her.
How old were you when this happened? You said you were in your 20s?
Yeah, I was probably about 12 years older than them. Now, here's the clincher. Here's why I think it's okay. Because I said, now get the hell out of here because real people are eating here. Now, what happened is they took off. And I was standing there, and she smiled at me. She says, thank you, thank you. I said, no problem. That smile made it all worthwhile. I think that made it okay from what I understand from you, Brother Ian. That's the first story. Now, this one actually is unfortunately violent. This was early 17. I had moved from the mountains of my property. I was in a little ramble, which I did. And it was the apartment right next to me. And I buddied up with this girl who was with this dude real quickly. She was a little older than me. I was 44 at the time. She had to be in her early 60s. We used to have coffee and tea in the morning. I had my coffee. And we got to know each other real fast. They were only there maybe 3 months. But after talking to her probably about going in the second month, I said, you know, things get pretty rough over there. I mean, they're arguing like all hell every night. She says, well, I can usually handle it. And I said to her, I said, well, you know what? If you can't handle it, because she didn't believe in cell phones. She didn't have one. If you can't handle it, you're right next door. Just call my name out real loud. I'll help. And what happened was, so it was the last month they were there, because I know they were asked to leave, you know, because of the arguing. And it was right before they were to leave. All of a sudden, one afternoon, I hear real loud, Ricky, real loud. And I blow out my door. Their door is open. It's an empty apartment. And there I see this guy having her pressed against the wall with his hands around her throat. Well, okay, at that moment, I took grabbed a hold of him, pulled him back. And then she pulled off, went up the side. And I proceeded to, now there's a clincher to this, okay? This is going to sound bad. I start smashing his head upside of the wall, which was concrete, over and over and over and over. Now, at a point, she said, Ricky, don't kill us.
Hold on, Ricky. We'll let you finish the story here in moments. Did he go too far, I think, is the question.
I had started a fight with a guy a few years ago in a bar because he was smacking a girl around pretty good.
Let's talk about it. Come up here. We'll get into it. And your calls and thoughts are welcome. The number is 603-283-6160. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. This is Free Talk Live. We're coming up.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. The FAA is delaying flights into the New York area due to the continuing bad air quality. That includes flights into New York City and Newark, New Jersey. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said in a statement that the agency is fully prepared to modify operations as needed as smoke from Canadian wildfires makes its way over the U.S. East Coast. President Biden is vetoing a measure that would have overturned his plan to assist with student debt. Mark Mayfield with the details.
Biden said in a tweet Wednesday he will not back down on helping hardworking folks. The proposal would impact 40 million borrowers, giving $10,000 in loan forgiveness to those making under $125,000 and $20,000 for those who received Pell Grants.
21 teenagers had to be sent to the hospital in Southeast Texas after a deck collapse this afternoon. Dave Collins, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track. Not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and Save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here at the number 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We were talking earlier about the community of freedom-loving people here in New Hampshire. The libertarians, the voluntarists, the liberty-loving anarchists. This is a growing community. It is a wonderful place to be here. But in order to get here, you got to have a place to live. And the folks over at the Porcupine Real Estate offices can help you with that. In fact, I just heard today that Carla Garrick, longtime president of the Free State Project, has become one of the new realtors over at Porcupine Real Estate. So you might be able to get her as your real estate agent, or of course Mark Warden or the rest of his crew. They've been putting on some webinars recently, and they've got some coming up that you can sign up for. The webinars are covering various different topics that set New Hampshire apart from the competition, like gun freedom, medical freedom, political freedom victories. They got best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing, of course. Go to move.freetalklive.com. That site will take you over to the Porcupine Real Estate sign-up page, where you can get signed up to attend these webinars online. You get your questions answered from people that know the business. They know the community like the back of their hand. These people are very experienced. Go to move.freetalklive.com. You can get signed up there. You can also visit Porcupine Real Estate on YouTube and see their previous presentations. The previous webinars are available there. But go get signed up for the upcoming ones at move.freetalklive.com. We got Ricky on the line here still in Pennsylvania. You were giving us a story about when you came to the aid of a woman in her 60s. When you were in your 40s, they were next-door neighbors to you in a more rural area, it sounded like. You went over there. As this woman was calling out for help, she was being attacked. Right. She'd sort of been known for fighting with her husband or boyfriend or whoever
it
was.
Well, it wasn't her. It was him. He was a dirtbag.
Sure, sure. But she was staying, she was still with him. And she had said she was going to call you if there was some sort of issue. She screamed your name. You ran over there. He was choking her out, had her up against a wall. You pulled him off and started banging his head up against a concrete wall.
Multiple times, and here's the finish of it. It was multiple times. I knew he was a mess. There was blood all over the place. And then she said, Ricky, don't kill him. I threw him down on the carpet in a pool of his own blood. I took off, peeled out the door, went over into my room, closed the door. Now, it was probably about 2 hours later. I hear a knock on the door. I'm like, hello? She says, Ricky. I said, oh, here. I open the door up, unlock the bolt. She comes in. She says, are you all right? I said, sweetheart, I think it's the other way around. Are you all right? I said, oh, I'm fine. I said, oh, okay. Well, she said, thanks. I said, no problem. I said, what about so-and-so? I messed him up pretty bad. I said, oh, he'll live.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't briefly see him after that, unfortunately. He was bandaged up bad. Now, here's the funny part of the story.
He didn't call the cops on you?
Oh, no, he didn't do that.
Okay.
But I tell you what did happen. I said to her, I said, what about the carpet? Because they were leaving, you know, they were leaving it there.
She said, I'll take security deposit.
So what happens is, it's probably the next day or so, they're gone. Ellen comes around to collect the rent, and I pull out the cash. She comes over to my apartment, and I pull out the money. She pulls out a receipt, and I said, yeah, I see so-and-so's left. I said, yeah, I had to do it, Rick. I said, yeah, I said, Ellen, what about the carpet? She says, well, that's okay. I know everything. I said, oh, you do? I said, yeah, I know everything, Rick. So you know everything? She says, yeah. I said, Ellen, I'm not like that. You know what she says to me? She says, she's an older woman too. She says, you know, I don't have a problem with anything you did. He was an abuser.
Yeah, I think most people probably wouldn't. I think that was, and thank you, Ricky, for the call tonight. I think that's the question is, did he go too far? I mean, would it have been sufficient to just pull the man off the woman, separate the two? Of course, presumably he would come back at Ricky in that particular case. But, you know, did he go too far by slamming his head up against the wall?
I don't think so. the guy, sometimes to like reprogram, you know, bad behavior, you need to feel some pain. And, you know, like I had said, I was in a bar when I was like 24, and there was a guy in town. He was known locally as just a local a-hole, and he was a big dude. He was like in his 40s, and he was like kind of a biker type guy, but like, you know, could never keep it together to own a Harley, you know, one of those guys that, you know,
the wannabe biker.
Well, he had like the tattoos and the leather jacket and, you know, and a skull cap he'd wear. Anyways, I remember he's slapping his girlfriend around, like he's hurting her.
Wow.
And she's like upset. And I'm like, why don't you pick on someone your own size? And I started, you know, wailing on him. And, he and I ended up with a black eye and a fat lip, and it was from the girlfriend.
What?
Yeah.
She defended him.
Yeah. I basically gave him a couple of shots. He stumbled backwards. He come at me, and so he was way bigger than me. He wasn't as good a shape as me. You know, at that time I was, you know, moving 100-pound bags of grain every day, stacking hay. You know, I was pretty strong. I was fat and overweight too, but so was he, but I was stronger. And I basically took him, and he came at me, and I sort of stepped out of the way and helped, you know, put him head first into a wall. He broke the sheetrock. And he's like laying there on the ground, and he's like, and then I just, all of a sudden I turn around and I get wailed.
Wow.
By his girlfriend. And like he never touched me, you know.
Damn.
It was probably the first time I really tried to drive my fist into someone hard, but like for like 4 days my hand hurt bad.
I bet. Damn.
And the hand actually hurt worse, more than like more than my face. But yeah, they're like, "What happened to you?" You got a black eye and a fat lip. I'm like, "God, his girl punched me," and you know, and like, it's a girl punching me. I just laughed. That's all I could do. You know, you can't. I wouldn't hit a girl. And and then like 6 months later, I was actually in the Palmer courthouse, and she was there filing a restraining order against him.
The guy.
And she was like, "Can I call a witness?" And I'm like, and I didn't even know it was her. And she goes, "There's a guy who witnessed him beat me. He's over there. I'm not sure what his name is." And I'm like, she's pointing at me. And so I'm like, "Yeah, I remember this." And so I just said what happened, you know. And
wow. Did she apologize to you later?
Oh, she gave me a big hug. And she was like, "I'm so sorry." Yeah, she became sort of a friend.
That's
for a little,
good.
Yeah.
That's good.
But she was like, "I was in a bad place. I was doing drugs." And this guy was known as like a, you know. But, you know, that's the kind of people that hang out at bars, right? You know, so.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on that. You know, someone could make the argument that Ricky went too far in bashing the guy's head into the concrete multiple times, but I think most people would see it as like, you know, hey, look, you get what you get. You strangle a woman and somebody's going to go off on you. That's what's going to happen.
The town I know, I grew up in. There was this family, they were a generation older than me. I was a teenager when this happened. And, this guy that I knew these guys were all my dad's age, you know, I was a teenager, and, he beat up his girlfriend bad. He hurt her bad. She was in the hospital and she wasn't going to go like do anything about it. Like, you know, she's like people who worship the government. You know, they're just in this abusive relationship and they love the government so much that they just keep paying taxes and taking the abuse. So anyways, she had three brothers. That guy spent like weeks in intensive care. Her three brothers found out what happened. They kind of knew what happened, and they went and beat this dude. And basically, after he had like a business in town, he had a couple houses, and everybody in town kind of knew what was going on. And he never like reported who. I don't think he could identify who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's had to be 25 years since this happened. But basically, once that guy got out of the hospital, everything got a for sale sign on it, and nobody ever saw him again. He sold the business, sold the properties, he was gone.
Let's go to the phones here. I got James in Kentucky on the line. James, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Jay. James?
James, how you doing?
Hey, you're on the air, James. Go ahead.
Oh, it's been a long time, I tell you.
Oh, hey, James. What's up?
I tell you what. These people that go to court and stuff, they need to start filling in some papers and send it to the court, tell them what they know and stuff against their rules. See, when you go into court, you got to take their rules against them, what they supposed to uphold, like the Constitution and all that.
Well, it's easier said than done. I mean, and sometimes you bring up the Constitution, the judge will find you in contempt because he doesn't want the Constitution brought up in his courtroom.
Yeah, I've been threatened with that several times.
It's admissible, though.
No, not if the judge says it's not.
He's a crook. He's a crook.
Right, they are. Then a judge says, I have ruled that the Constitution doesn't apply or doesn't matter in this case. And I believe the judge is probably right when he says that, because if you're claiming to be a United States citizen on some document, you filled out some government form and check off the box, United States citizen, you have condemned yourself to be a second-class citizen. You are no longer a first-class citizen, and you no longer have these rights secured by the Constitution, because United States citizens, per the 14th Amendment, federal United States citizens, are subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, and they have privileges and immunities, not God-given constitutionally secured rights. And also, if you're using a date of birth, I believe the date of birth ties people into this jurisdiction, because the date of birth is essentially intellectual property that the government is charged to enforce. This is why I don't tell these guys a date of birth, because I don't have a date of birth. You want to compel me to say I have a date of birth? I think that's like tying a guy to a post and beating him until he says his name is Toby, as far as I'm concerned.
James?
We're in big trouble this year, by the way.
Why?
July the 4th and 9/11 of this year, it adds all up. You know what I'm talking about, Jim Montre?
No, what
I don't
is
know
that?
What
What's
that,
that?
Is.
Well, it's 18. 21 is 777, the lower gods, but 18, 6 plus 6 plus 6 is
18. What is eight? Where's 18 come from, though? What's six? Where do the three sixes come from?
Well, you got to add out, like, okay,
911. 911.
Plus.
That's 11.
23. You got to all add up all the numbers.
Okay.
And it comes out to 18, and you know, 666 is 18.
This is some numerology stuff you're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. Yes.
Gematria, what I was told.
Gematria? Is that the word?
Gematria. Gematria or whatever.
I've heard of it. I don't know really what it means. I bet if Bonnie were here, she'd be able to tell us a little bit about that. She's into the numbers.
So if there's a false flag, mm-hmm. there's a false flag happen on that day, it's because they planned it.
You think a false flag would happen on 9/11 or just any old day?
July 4th, he said.
It happened on 9/11 before, the World Trade Center.
So are you saying, when's this false flag going to happen according to your
Well, I don't know if it is well or not, but if it does happen that day, you know, it was already planned. The higher-ups, they call them the elite, the bigwigs, they use this kind of stuff.
I call them the pedophile elite.
Gematria is, according to Wikipedia, the practice of assigning a numerical value to a name, word, or phrase according to an alphanumeric cipher. So, yeah, this is related to...
They're a cult, though. They're the occult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that. There's a lot of really weird stuff. Like, if you go to vigilantcitizen.com, there's all kinds of weird... occult stuff that goes on in, like, pop culture, and the politicians are into it or whatever. There's some creepy stuff that's going on out there.
There's one more thing before I leave.
Yes, sir.
I want you to look up these words. Alien enemy resident and the loss of nationality.
Alien enemy residents?
Yep. And the loss of nationalities. Well, the loss of nationality is when they swore an oath and stuff to uphold the Constitution. And it says that lists five ways you can lose your United States citizenship.
Mm-hmm. You never had it in the first place, though.
What now?
You never had a citizenship in the first place. It's just a big lie.
Well, we're citizens, alien enemy.
No, that's just what they tell you.
Citizen.
No. They're just lying to you. See, Jamie, if you look up the word citizen... in any old dictionary, you'll find it's someone who owes a duty of allegiance in return for an obligation of protection. Simple. It's supposed to be an arrangement. It's supposed to be a deal. And they have no obligation to protect you, Jamie. They in their Supreme Court have ruled many times that they have no obligation to protect you. Uh-huh. So therefore, if there's no obligation to protect, you could not possibly owe them a duty of allegiance. Therefore, there is no such thing as a citizen.
It's called a Smith Act.
What's that?
Back in the day, that's another name for what I just told you. Alien enemy resident. Okay. It's called the Smith Act back in the day.
Well, hey, thanks for the call tonight, man. I appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. You can bring up anything. Let's talk to Gigi in South Carolina. Go ahead, Gigi.
Good evening, everybody. Please excuse me. I'm with a very bad case of laryngitis. I have a question for everybody listening this evening across the U.S. of A. Now, it reinforces the former caller's concept of Constitution and civil liberties. Why, and I'm asking this in a facetious manner, would someone of a strong-minded, accomplished, successful, legal and academic credentials, why did the grand jury this evening in Miami-Dade County, Florida, grant 7 indictments against former President Donald J. Trump when, and I emphasize when, the alleged cause in parentheses S, close parentheses, of alleged actions, allegedly take place in Palm Beach County. Wrong jurisdiction.
Okay, wait a minute. You're saying the indictment came from Miami and...
From Miami-Dade County, federal courthouse, earlier this evening.
I can answer your question.
My question is, when there is an alleged cause or causes of action, a grand jury must coincide directly with the jurisdiction unless a change of venue has been filed, which never happened thus far. What is going on?
Okay. Go ahead with your answer, Jay.
Well, so if the question is basically why did they indict him, you know, the...
No, that's not what my question is, sir.
Oh, sorry.
She seems to be...
The seven indictments all came from a federal grand jury out of the jurisdiction for the federal court of Miami-Dade County, Florida.
Yeah.
Not... Palm Beach.
Palm Beach is like, but I mean, Gigi, I'm looking at a map here. Palm Beach is 70 miles away from Miami, so.
It doesn't matter. The jurisdiction of the alleged.
Okay, but we're talking about federal court, so I've got a map here.
It doesn't matter. There are federal courts in every county.
No, that's not true.
Yes, there are.
Okay, so Gigi, I mean, you're a lawyer. I would expect you, at least, I'm pretty sure you've told us you're a lawyer before. I would expect that you would know that.
South Carolina.
Okay, well, maybe you've never done federal cases before, but in federal court, they have different.
I did.
Okay, well, then
not
you should.
In South
then,
Carolina.
All right, well, look, I'm not trying to tell you your business, Gigi, but in federal court, they have districts, okay? And so Florida has three of them, according to the map that I pulled up here. And,
right, but these were partly state violations.
Well, I don't know how she could be indicted in federal court on a state violation. Maybe they can, but either way, if it's a federal court.
It has to coincide with the jurisdiction.
Okay, but if it's a federal court. And it's all within the Southern District of Florida, then it doesn't matter.
Then it's kosher.
Huh?
Then you are correct, sir.
Yeah. And that's what I'm seeing here on the map. So according to the map, Palm Beach and Miami are both in the Southern Federal District of Florida. So I think that explains it. But I think the more important question here is, what is the indictment? And I am seeing here, this is apparently breaking news tonight. So first that
there are so-called seven causes of action that he was indicted on in Miami-Dade County.
Okay, apparently, according to CNBC.com and their reporting on this, the nature are not public of the charges. The indictment is currently sealed. So
they're talking about it on MSNBC. They're talking
I'm sure they're talking about it on
CNBC. They're talking about it on CNN.
They're talking about it, but they don't know anything about it yet. That is the thing. I mean, they're just talking about the fact that it's happening. It is in the process, but we don't know any details.
Those are always different issues, right?
Yeah, well, we don't know what the issues are at this point. Presumably, knowing the feds, they're likely going to be felony charges just because they don't usually waste their time with misdemeanors. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out as he is attempting to actually run for political office in 2024.
Well, here's a good follow-up question, everybody. Can somebody run for federal office if they are being indicted?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes, they can.
Yes, I knew I loved you.
Okay. Gigi, thanks for the... That's my understanding. I'm not a lawyer, but it's my understanding you can
that's
run.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's why you're very bright, and I have a terrible crush on you. I love your intellect.
Oh, thanks, Gigi. I don't think you can run if you're convicted, though. While you're actually serving your sentence out, you would not be able to run. But as soon as you've served the time in the probation, then you can run again at that point, even if you're a federal
felon. Ask you a question.
Yes.
Can a nice Jewish girl fall in love with a Catholic boy?
Probably.
I think so.
Okay. Thanks, Gigi. I appreciate it. I don't know who the Catholic boy is. It's certainly not me. Thanks for the call. So Trump's been indicted. That's pretty big breaking news right now, and we already knew that he was indicted in New York City in the district of, or not federal, that was state charges in New York out of Manhattan. So he went up there, I don't know, what was that, 2 months ago or something like that for those charges.
You know,
now they're hitting him again in Florida in federal court.
So... They're going after Trump. They're indicting Trump. Ghislaine Maxwell is doing 20 years in prison
right.
for running a prostitute, a child prostitution sex ring. And none of her clients have been indicted. But yet you're going after Trump. And you know, Mel Gibson's coming out with a four-part series explaining, like, the $34 billion American child sex trafficking business, to where 800,000 children a year in the United States go missing.
Do you think he's going to indict Hollywood in this particular production?
He is talking about indicting Hollywood. I think that the media is going to come out very hard against Mel Gibson. I think that they're going to, all the sure, corporate horse dream media like CNN and mm-hmm. MSNBC and all these guys that, you know, ran cover for Epstein when stuff was against him, and like you had Vice and VH1 doing like puff pieces on Epstein, all these guys running cover for the pedophile elite. And Mel Gibson is, you know, come out against this, and he's talking about how, you know, they went to Ukraine to, like, go look into this because they had a name of, like, 10 or 20 kids that had been, like, trafficked that they were going to investigate. And what they found in this little snippet I, you know, heard about Mel Gibson's thing, they come up with 10,000 names of children that have gone missing and got sex trafficked. And actually, Putin had been talking about
10,000 from Ukraine?
Yeah, 10,000 Ukrainian children, mm-hmm. you know, being sex trafficked out of Ukraine by Biden's friends, who he's been, you know, doing
maybe
business deals with, and Biden's son. Mm-hmm. And we know that, you know, President Joe Biden's a pedophile. His daughter talked about it in, you know, her Ashley Biden's diary. We know that
his son allegedly had him in his phone as under the name Pedo Peter.
Yep. And you can see him just, you know, the guy's a demented, like, you know, the dude who's he's always like groping little girls and sniffing their yep. hair. There's all these
lots of video of that.
Yep, there's lots of video of that. So we have 800,000 kids a year going missing in the United States, a $34 billion sex trafficking industry. We have ex-CIA agents coming out talking about this.
Well, they're too busy going after crypto sellers and Donald Trump.
Right, and Donald Trump,
to be bothered going after the actual like child sex traffickers.
Yeah, and you got the fentanyl overdoses. You got all kinds of stuff. And basically what you have is you have America is being, essentially they're destroyed from within, as we always knew that's what the fall would be. That's basically what every, you know, scholar in history says. It'll collapse from, you know, an enemy within. And they're attacking people that aren't doing anything wrong, and they are just turning their head on people who are literally raping children.
The number, if you want to join us here, 603-283-6160. We got Trump, of course, has taken to his Truth Social account to speak out about this. We'll share his post coming up here in a moment to share your thoughts as well. This is Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine Tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.